The Left Show is not intended for youngsters. It's not intended for the sensitive. It's certainly not intended for right-wingers. Use your own discretion. Awful sweary.
The network children ask for by name. The Defenestrate Media Network.
The world's greatest podcast network.
Hey, folks, Jeff here.
Hey, JC here.
And Clarity.
I'm like pointing to Oregon.
Yeah.
Just wanted to remind you guys that there is an option in which you get more of The Left Show every week. It's Patreon.
Come on. You know an hour is not enough.
For as little as a dollar a month, you could be part of our Patreon family. That's 25 cents an episode.
Don't be a Scrooge.
For just 25 cents an episode, you can feed these poor starving podcasters.
Well, and then Clarity went and made it like seasonal, so now I can only use it for a week.
I know.
Look, we have a lot of fun and everything's pretty casual, personal, and we do cover the news that we don't get to in the regular show on Patreon. So we'd like to invite you, our listeners, over. And again, as little as a dollar a month gets you access to all sorts of new, different, and completely unique content.
It's perfect.
It is perfect.
Don't be a bastard.
Much better. Thank you.
You know who the best looking person sitting up there was? Who was it with the cowboy hat?
No, J.M. Bell.
J.M. Bell. Mm-hmm. I don't know who that is.
He hosts a podcast.
Well, he was good looking.
Stop. You're listening to the world's greatest political podcast, The Left Show. Hello, my name's Jeff.
Hi, Jeff.
I am joined this week all the way from cloudy Oregon, Clarity Sanderson.
Hi there.
Hi, Clarity.
All the way from earlier today, J.C. Carter.
Hello.
All the way from even earlier today, Sergeant Jake.
Jake! Hello, myself. It's nice to meet me.
So,
this is why we want you in the room.
I'm not even drunk yet.
I know. This is why we want you in the room. When you're at home, you're distracted. But right. When you're in the room,
well, right now we're gold. All in a place of overcompensation. We're just trying too hard to be whatever. Mm-hmm. So I am drinking on the show, other than sips, for the first time in years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this now's the time to pretend.
Fat tire. This is from Fort Collins. So let's just get out of the way at the beginning. And that is on Thursday into Friday, our very beloved good friend Forrest started going severely downhill and passed away Friday afternoon. It was heavy and not a lot. I don't know. Thursday was weird. Let's break this down. So,
really?
Yeah. So I get a call in the afternoon about an hour or so before I'm supposed to go to work. Basically saying, if you want to see him, you ought to get up here now. I called work. I'm like, can somebody cover me for whatever? Can somebody come in? Whatever. And it's more because Charles is fucking awesome sometimes.
Yeah.
He's like, just fucking go. So I went up and was there from about 2:30 in the afternoon. I left a little before 1 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
My kids came up. Forrest's kids were there. And at one point, the whole goddamn thing turned into a party. And it was really weird. Food was bought. Booze was bought. there was drinking and chatting. And at the same time, there's Forrest going through his shit. It was fucking surreal. It was so weird. And I can't for the life of me figure out, honestly, whether or not he would have liked it. Because he would have liked everybody that came by. And he would have been pleased by that. But also, when he's not feeling well, he didn't really like having a parade. And it was a fucking parade.
Was he totally unaware?
Sort of, yeah.
He came in and out.
Yeah. The moment for me was, I mean, he was pretty much catatonic, and everybody had wandered outside for a smoke and everything, and I was just standing by the bed and holding his hand and saying nice things and apologizing a lot. And he opened his eyes, which he hadn't done yet since I'd been there for about 3 hours. And he looked me right in the eye and he's like, I need something to drink. Gatorade.
Remember that.
And I'm like, ah! Coming right up, pal. And then, you know, immediately his eyes shut and he went back and I went and had Cynthia like, he wants Gatorade. How do you know? He used his words. So he finally fell asleep Thursday night. I came back Friday morning. He was hurting pretty bad and just passed away a few minutes after four on Friday. And I'm not going to get into everybody's details. You know, his kids got an opportunity to be there, you know, in his last hours, and that was pretty fucking cool.
Yeah.
I got to be there, and again, we've talked about this. We talked about this on Patreon a couple of weeks ago about how just much I needed to get my ass up there, you know, and just see him, just hang out for a little while, and just kept putting it off and putting it off because, much like his own demise, Forrest kept putting it off and putting it off and putting it off. And so I thought I had time. I really thought I had time. And this whole week, I mean, you and I even talked about it last week.
Yeah, we were going to go up and it didn't happen, but.
Yeah, it's just.
Yeah.
So being there at the very end has made me feel serious. I'm having some serious guilt issues. Karma is paying me back really well. It gave me a feeling fallout. So I got a toothache. The toothache's making me have migraines, you know, and so I deserve it. I have.
I'm just saying. You're always punishing yourself.
Yeah.
You are. You really are. I don't know. Yeah.
Some Nine Inch Nails have a song about that.
Yeah, Johnny Cash did it better.
Yeah.
Right.
So I don't know. I put together links for a show because I don't know what's going to happen in the next few minutes. We could sit here and wax poetic and have a really nice think about Forrest. You know, or we could all get super sad and just move forward into the news. I don't know. I don't know what form or structure any of this should take other than, you know, fuck that guy. Because
that was the thing, right? That was it. That was it. I don't know. I mean, I met Forrest for the first time in the theater of all places because I'd arranged to have us do our first photo shoot at a theater in Midvale. And the only people I knew were Jeff and Sergeant Jake. And I barely remembered Sergeant Jake from my days of hanging out at the, not Port of Call, the
Anchors Away,
when we were making the movie. And Jake was the guy I was hanging around. So, yeah, I remember running to Sergeant Jake and talking to him a lot. And
used to beg out front.
Yeah, you did. and then so I meet Forrest for the first time and this other guy and who shall not be named and we did our photo shoot and I was like, I don't know what this show's going to be then, because I don't know what this is going to be about, or, you know, just Jeff doing what he was doing on KSL, but let's see what we do. And then I got to do my first show with everybody and I was like, wow, this is really going to be fun.
And it has been.
It's been tremendous.
A lot of years. Now, the way we originally put the show together was I had two groups, and you guys were going to trade off weeks so that I didn't overburden anybody.
Right.
You know, you'd do about 20 shows a year, and everybody would be mellow. Forrest decided right away that he was going to do all of them with me. And for the most part, until he got sick, I think he only missed a couple.
Because it wasn't that his in-laws were coming over every Sunday and he just wanted to get the fuck out of the house.
Yeah.
I think that was it. He was like, I don't want to be there when they're there, so I'm coming over.
I've forgotten about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was, so he was here every week for the first, almost 200 shows.
Yeah.
And then it was coming into 200 was when he first got sick.
Well, it's why the big to-do for 200
never happened.
I had a conflict with something in the theater that happened. I was like, sorry, Jeff, I don't know that I'm going to make it.
Yeah, pushed us for that.
And so Jeff pushed it a little bit, and then Forrest just
We did. We did. 199 A, B, C, D, E, and G.
And I was feeling guilty until I realized, wait, I'm here now. Where the hell's Forrest? He was ghosting us a lot. And you're like, oh, he doesn't feel like coming. He doesn't feel good. And we knew that he had a problem because we used to make the joke of, I got to pee. Everybody get ahead of Forrest when we take our potty break because we knew he'd take the longest. And we joked about him having, you know,
An enlarged prostate,
prostate the size of a softball or grapefruit or watermelon or whatever we decided that week. And didn't think anything of it, figured it was getting treated and found out that, no, it wasn't getting treated the way it was supposed to be.
Well, what happened there towards the end was the urologist, they couldn't get the insurance company to pay for the PSA.
Right.
So he gave
him... A load of horseshit, by the way.
Right.
Yeah.
Gave him a bunch of antibiotics, one-week treatment, and it didn't help anything.
Right. So trying to treat him for urinary tract infections.
Right. Yeah. So he gave him a far more powerful two-week dose, and he worked his way through that, and nothing happened. And then I think finally the doctor was like, fuck it, did the PSA anyway. Mm-hmm. And then that's when everything just kind of went to shit. And Forrest had apparently a reaction that a lot of men have, which I was unaware of, in that they don't want to talk about stuff that happens in their asshole.
Mm-hmm.
And think about it.
I don't know. You got a Marine and a theater guy. We know all about the asshole.
Yeah.
I lived inside of one of those for like 8 years.
So,
it was a world of shit.
So I remember when he came over and told me and then made me promise not to tell anybody else.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck, dude. Okay. And I believe.
I think I finally got you to tell me.
Yeah, I did.
I finally got you to tell me. I'm like, what the hell is going on with Forrest?
Yeah, we had that conversation too.
There'll be a vault. Just tell me what's going on with Forrest. And he told me, I was like, fuck. Yeah. Well, fuck.
And even then we didn't know how bad because he was keeping most of that to himself.
Exactly.
He wasn't even telling his family. And so anyway, one thing leads to another. He goes in for surgery. We start doing shows again. 200 came and went. And fuck, he only came back 3 or 4 times, you know?
Yeah.
And one of those was the lead up to the benefit concert. Now, he was told he had 6 months, you know, on the outside.
After the surgery.
Right.
The surgery that was supposed to maybe get the cancer and get it out of him, and then it turned out, nope.
Well, because he was stage 4 the minute they found it.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
So, given 6 months... he was suddenly out of work. He was losing his insurance. Things were looking really bad. So we held the Save the Forest, the Shaw family fundraiser.
Right.
And because we honestly thought, and Forrest honestly thought, that this would be money that would be for the family to take care of certain things once he passed.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of stories on what happened with that, but this fundraiser was successful.
It was a good fundraiser.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little over long.
Yeah.
It went late. But the fundraiser went well. And then Forrest managed to hang on for another 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Which is fucking amazing. I mean, just amazing. You consider the fact that his PSA, prostate specific antigen, for those of you that are wondering why we keep saying public service announcement. His PSAs were, if you have a point, 2,
yeah,
you have to have your prostate taken out.
Mm-hmm.
His were in the thousands.
Yeah,
by the end.
By the end, without his prostate.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
he was a big advocate. I think the first time he really was able, I think he came out on Facebook about what was going on first, and I think he did that in preparation for what he was doing up on the hill. Because he got...
It was really close, yeah.
He went up to Capitol Hill, and he argued in favor of medical cannabis because I think Christine talked him into it.
Sure.
But because he'd connected with Christine about all of this, and Christine Senquist, and
Well, and he's the reason that we know her, and that she and I are still friends now.
Yeah, no, she was, it was great to meet her and hear her story. So he went up and just basically told our completely indifferent state legislature and state senate his story and what had happened to him and what they had done to him and how the only thing that could manage the pain in any way was cannabis.
Sorry. A little whiskey.
A little whiskey there. This is cowboy whiskey. You got to be careful with that.
You'll be all right there, son.
Have fun. I think I should.
You don't drink much, do you?
Sarsaparilla. Well, I drink scotch from time to time, yep. And I drink bourbon from time to time. It is tasty as hell. What are we drinking?
It's bullet bourbon. It's bullet bourbon. This is a bourbon as opposed to their rye. Their rye is just as tasty. Yeah, their rye is just as tasty. This is their bourbon. This is true bourbon. It's 51% corn mash, bottled in bond, that sort of thing. It's 50 proof, you know, good stuff. And it's cowboy bourbon. This is Frontier whiskey. So
I don't know what. I've had some. We had some when we were recording the other show, and I was fine.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a little strong.
A little strong. This one got you.
Punched me right in the back of the throat. Yeah.
You chew on it a little bit. It makes your cheeks all happy.
Yeah,
it does. It helps numb that tooth, too, if you chew on it.
There you go.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, see?
Yeah, it might be the acetaminophen,
too. That could be that, too.
Your liver's going to love you.
My liver's going to be pretty pissed at me today.
It's fine. It's three times the size of normal now, so it can take it.
Yeah, I took Alka-Seltzer and then swished it.
You can hack it.
Yeah. So
we're drinking whiskey, which is the irony because we stopped letting Forrest have whiskey.
Yeah, no whiskey for Forrest.
Yeah.
We did that once.
I remember that show.
He got so angry.
He got angry and
he talked slower. It was like watching him do acid or something. I mean, he really went somewhere else. It was crazy.
And then he'd be like, "Give me whiskey." No. Come on. No. Forrest doesn't get whiskey. That actually pissed him off a couple of times. It's just like, you can have some when we're done recording and you're at home. Away from me. See, it got meaner, didn't it?
Every now and then it comes at you. Walks up and says, "Draw, pilgrim." Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Meeting Christine, that was good. And that advocacy was nothing. I hadn't heard the whole story yet. You know, I was waiting for him to tell us the whole story, even when we were going over to see him and stuff in the early days before he moved out of his house and started couch surfing. Including couch surfing at Jeff's house.
No, we put together a room for him. He was there for quite a while. Mm-hmm. And really didn't like it. It was right when they started his hormone therapy and it was just fucking with his head.
Yeah.
So he spent a lot of time making a lot of scary noises and you know, freaking out the kids and stuff like that. But 'cause they were young, didn't understand what was going on. And, you know, here I am. One of my best friends is sick and needs a place to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I took him in. And I took him in when everything had sort of crashed. And his sadness was really at a very, very high point.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent him off on a few of his little international excursions out of our place.
Mm-hmm.
Including where he went to Panama with one of his cousins. You know, he went back east for a little while. I went to California a couple times. It's a lot of people with an awful lot of heart did a bunch for him to make sure that those last few years just weren't, you know, just him in despair. There were ups for him in which he got to go and do stuff and see people and either see old friends or meet new friends and Facebook friends.
Mm-hmm.
The reasons aside, it was cool to see that these people gave that big a shit about him. Right now, over at podcastphil.com, We're raising money to throw a memorial for him, to take care of some of these end-of-life memories and things. And we're trying to raise between $3,500 and $5,000. We've raised about $1,000 so far.
Nice.
So if you
That's
can,
awesome.
Yeah, if you can help out, podcastphil.com, I would very much appreciate it. And then we can get that moving and have a memorial for him soon. If I figure it out, we'll record it. And then we'll release it as a podcast, because I will do that to anything.
I'm depending on it.
Yeah. And I honestly don't. I think that he would absolutely approve.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about his end-of-life wishes and his memorial wishes many, many morbid times. And apparently, and if I'm wrong, get a hold of me. I need help. Mm-hmm. But he only talked to me about it. Because right there at the end, everybody's like, okay, Jeff, what's going to happen? And I'm like, go, fuck. It turns out I've had at least 2 years to start playing in this shit. You know,
you did try something a number of years ago, a couple of years ago. I remember.
We tried doing Save the Forest 2.
We tried doing a fundraiser for any kind of funeral expenses. This is before we knew he was trying to get his body donated. We tried to do that, and that was going pretty well. But then that was because you were thinking it could be tomorrow that we lose him.
Well, I ended up for about a year and a half paying mm-hmm. a monthly premium on a funerary insurance policy.
Right.
And I had a chat with him when I had to drop it. I'm like, dude, I just don't have the $30 a month anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, and he said, well, I'm thinking about donating my body to science. And I'm like, okay. I mean, that's awesome if that's what you want.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I'm comfortable with it yet. I should be. I'd want to be in much better shape if I'm donating my body to science so that the med students don't point and laugh.
I'm like, here, just take this mess. You figure it out.
Yeah. No, I want to be shredded.
Yeah.
I want the girl doctors to be to just get all weepy that, oh, such an Adonis.
He had to die.
What a shame to have him go. That's my Punisher.
So when you know it's your last year, just go vegan so you just drop all the weight.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It'll just be a floppy skin bag. That'll
exactly.
be fun.
Sad way to go.
Last year.
A sad, angry way to go.
Yeah. I got a feeling I get a you've got months to live prognosis.
Yeah.
I'm going to eat until I need new clothes.
Yeah.
And it'll be just sweatpants. Because it's like, well, I'm not going to spend big and tall money on the pants snuggie. If I'm out of here. And
get one of those snuggies off of late night TV.
Exactly. Yeah. The full-on sweatsuit.
Bring me a dress.
I wore one of those for the fat in the fat suit, and it was like, I'm like, wow, this is where I could go one day if I don't watch my ways. And they went to a lot of trouble, like the costume slash props designer. She went to a lot of trouble of staining across the chest. It was nasty looking, that sweatsuit. So yeah, that
good
could
times.
Be you.
So this
at the end.
This weekend sucked.
Yeah, it did.
I mean, let's just be.
It did. No, it did. It was.
You know what I just now realized that we forgot to do?
What's that?
Weekend of Bernie's routine.
They came and got him really fast. We didn't
they
have
really
time.
They really did.
Yeah. No time to weekend and Bernie's the guy.
Yeah.
I mean, that was, I called you and was like, you know, I think it was about 10 minutes later. And,
yeah.
And you
yeah,
were.
You called me at like, I think it was 4:15 on Wednesday and said he was like in his last hour.
Thursday.
So
on Thursday. Yeah.
Well, no, because he died Thursday, right?
No, he died Friday.
Friday.
He died Friday? Oh, mm-hmm. Shit. It was Thursday then.
No, wait.
Right?
I don't know.
It was Friday.
I'm confused.
This whole thing's like been a haze. I think
no, it was
no,
Thursday.
It was Thursday.
It was Thursday.
It was Thursday.
I called you Wednesday.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I went, so I took off from work because my boss is out of town. Oh, that was bad news. And so I spent until like 11 there. And yep. Then one of the things I'd left at work blew up my work. So I had to go home. And right. But like when you called me, The idea was is that he was gone in the next hour.
That's what we were told. That's what hospital.
Yeah, like minutes, right? So, like 11 o'clock, he was still strong. He was like trying to sit up and arguing and laying on his side and I thought he was gonna last. So I went and did my work and he called me the next day at about the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was already gone. So.
Yep.
Yep.
And then you got there 10, 15 minutes later.
Yeah.
And then 45 minutes after that, the mortuary was there. I mean, it was fast. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They were there fast. And they were a classy couple of guys.
Yeah.
You know, very, very respectful, very, very quiet. Did their best to just not be the specter.
Stand there, hands closed, like morticians.
It's an art form.
It's an art form, but I got to tell you, I had two guys show up when my father-in-law passed away. The man weighed easily 600 pounds. And when he died in the living room, sitting in his office-style chair with his feet up on the couch watching TV. And these two guys come in. One is a guy, I swear, I'm like, are you like the model for the coffins? Because this guy was a skinny old man, like in his 60s or 70s. And there's this young dude, and I said, I don't know how the three of us are going to move him. And it was like the Marx Brothers moving a guy. It was sad. And it was hard. So I'm glad they were able to be
Well, they discreet. Were. He was in a hospital bed.
For my sister, they were fairly discreet when they came, I remember. And, yeah.
No, it was just fucking rough. Everybody, I mean, it was just...
Mm-hmm. The only thing with my sister is I was mad they were late. Because I'd gotten the call. We'd gone down. We were already heading down to Provo. I got the call from my niece saying, you probably need to come today. I said, okay, well, I'm doing this thing until this time. I will come after that. And then she just kept texting me. You need to come. I didn't realize it was that sudden.
Imminent.
And then I'm like telling my wife, okay, we need to go. We were like at a family reunion. I'm like, we need to go now. And she's like, okay, well, I'm going to go do these 500 things. And when I come back, we'll go. I'm like, okay. And then she comes walking back. I'm sitting there. She comes walking back. She's like, okay, should we go so we can see your sister? And I'm like, it's too late. I'd already gotten the text that she's gone. And then we get to my mom's house. I'm like, but we're going to my mom's house so I can be with my mom. Get to my mom's house because that's where my sister was. And they hadn't taken the body yet. I was like, I don't really want to know. Now I'm obligated to go in. I don't need that.
Dead bodies aren't a lot of fun.
No.
No.
Not even when you want a weekend to Bernie's them. No, it's not fun. And so I was like, I'll pop my head in for a real fast second and then go take care of mom.
Oh, my God. I am having a Dr. Demento moment. Yeah. And I am really, really, really ashamed of my brain.
You're welcome.
Yep.
Yeah. The dead puppy song. You remember?
Did you psychically transmit to that to him?
Hey, you know, yeah.
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah. It's like this weekend's just been, this last 2 weeks has been just murder between Alan Bethel and then Forrest and then... For me, it was my uncle this weekend.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's too much going on for me to not have
a deranged sense of humor.
Disturbingly dark sense of humor.
Disturbingly dark sense of humor.
Like I'm biting my tongue to not, you know.
So I wake up Friday morning because as soon as Jeff called me, rather than driving anywhere, I walked home and dove into a bottle. And
yeah, I did that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That helps.
It helped a lot. And I... sorry, Clarity, I couldn't be much support for you.
No, that's okay.
I was well into my cups
by the time
you... It's
very weird being over here
by the time you texted
and seeing everything from afar.
And then I woke up the next morning. I was like, I should have called Bob. Oops. So I texted him first thing on Friday. First, I checked, making sure he hadn't been on.
Why are you lighting fires? Shit.
Don't mind me. Just do what you do.
I had to make sure he hadn't gotten on the...
You burn the house down?
Yeah. What are you melting over
there? There's plastic melted on my knife, so I'm burning it off.
Why is there plastic melted on your knife?
Because I had to poke holes in my...
You've been stabbing G.I. Joe again, haven't you?
I had to poke holes in the holder so that my water bottle wouldn't get...
You're not a real American hero! Good! Die! Die!
I'll talk!
We now understand Jake's childhood now.
Would you open the window? It's all plastic fumey in here. That wasn't well. I didn't think that
one.
You
didn't think that one out very well, did you?
I'm a little tipsy. Yeah. Let's be honest. I've had some whiskey
and half a beer.
Yeah, half a beer. I don't drink much.
Or a third of a beer,
if that.
If that. Yeah.
If that at all.
So I texted Bob, and then he wrote a very beautiful thing on Facebook later that day. So
there's been a lot of cool shit on Facebook.
Fucking, yeah, fucking broke my heart. Words.
Yeah.
Is the smell of burning plastic good, better, or worse than your dog farts?
Oh, it's way better.
Okay.
Yeah, that's got something special going on.
Because for those of you guys that don't know, it's every other weekend I get my kids. And since I don't really have a place to live, I go over to Jake's. And we are your second family. And we camp out there because apparently your wife's patience for me has grown in the years since I lived with you before.
Yeah, it took 20 years, but she's okay now.
Yeah. It's funny. You could have the same relationship at our house, too.
That's true.
Yeah.
But it is. I mean, it's Kyla was making a joke about it the other day, and I told her, I'm like, one of the reasons your mom married me was because of just the morning comedy routine between me and Jake. And that she couldn't figure out why I wasn't as happy or funny when we moved in together and I moved out of Jake's place. You're not as much fun. I'm like, yeah. I don't live my bunny anymore.
Yeah, he told us the story of you busting into his room when his alarm went off. Because he has the red alert.
Brilliant.
That's right. That's pretty funny.
I must have snoozed once or something.
No, you pointed out that, like, the day before, you pointed out that I had a phaser on my wall, like, yes. Star Trek phaser. And mm-hmm. and I had the insomnia again, and so I was in my office, which is right across the room
mm-hmm.
from his.
Yeah.
And I was, like, playing a video game or something, and I heard that red alert. And I'm like, phaser! And so I turned around, and I grabbed it, and I ran in there. They did the, I don't know, the John Belushi dance.
It cracked me the fuck up. I woke right up. I mean, it was Forrest's loss of joy, I think, you know, was one of the biggest ongoing tragedies of the whole goddamn illness.
Yes.
Losing Forrest is the biggest.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, there were weeks when he and I were talking where I think mentally he was there enough to come and do the shows, but he believed that he wasn't. He got himself in a terrible phase.
Well, it was
of self-doubt.
The hormone therapy that he was going through. I knew was fucking with his head a lot.
Yeah,
and I understood when he explained that how the hormone therapy took him to dark places.
Yep.
I was like, I now understand why you don't want to do the show.
Yeah.
I think it's bullshit. You should come do the show anyway, because we could still, you know, make something of that.
Still goof off and still make him laugh. I mean, that's...
we always used to talk about it, and even in the martial arts, to say, you know, it's one thing if you've got to go deal with family and everything if someone dies, but you know, if you can't deal with it, come to class anyway. At least by the time you're done, you'll feel better. You know, you'll feel better when you're done. A little bit of verbal combat in this case, doing the left show, would have made him feel a little better, I think.
I do too.
But I respected his decision, and that was sad. Not, you know, I never respected Jake's decision not to come back, but...
Well, I don't blame you.
Forrest got sick. Jake's just a corporate whore.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, look, let's take a break. When we come back, I have no idea what's on the other side. None at all.
What is your emergency?
My kid shot himself.
All right, where's the wound, sir?
911, what's your emergency?
Please help. My son shot his brother.
911, what is your emergency? Okay. 911, please state your emergency.
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns.
It wasn't locked.
Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
I'm probably okay to have one more drink before I drive home. I'm probably okay. I open the window to stay alert.
Probably okay. I just popped some gum in my mouth.
Step out of the car, please.
I probably made a mistake.
Probably okay isn't okay when it comes to drinking and driving. If you see a warning sign, stop and call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This week on the world's greatest comic book podcast, it's our 322nd episode.
That seems familiar somehow.
We remember one of our own who has passed.
I'm not telling a joke here.
A response to Bill Maher, Zombieland is getting a sequel.
With Rosario Dawson.
Don't forget to double tap.
On TV, Star Trek Discovery takes down mansplaining.
Did you just tell me to double tap Rosario Dawson?
I did.
The CW renews 6 comic book series.
Because that sounds super naughty.
Travelers is canceled at Netflix.
And I am into it.
In comics, we talk about Doctor Strange, number 400, Peter Cannon Thunderbolt, Man Without Fear.
Of course.
And Superman. All this and Stan Lee. Face front, true believers, it's the 322nd episode of the world's greatest comic book podcast. Available Tuesdays on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Google Podcast, and thecomicbookpodcast.com.
322, the number of rings that we get if we cut open your leg.
That's it.
Okay. Because you're old.
Has taken everything and everyone I've ever loved away from me. Everything.
I blew my ankle out and I got prescribed pain pills by my doctor.
If making my detox public is gonna help somebody, I'm all for it. I just wish I would have had a warning.
Opioid dependence can happen after just 5 days. Know the truth, spread the truth. A message from Truth, the Ad Council, and ONDCP.
All right, one of my favorite links that I found this week, and this one ties in with Forrest a little bit.
Yes, it does,
because
actually,
when we're talking about medical cannabis, after addicting a nation, OxyContin maker wanted to start a for-profit rehab business.
Oh, those motherfuckers.
Yeah, not content with billions of dollars in profits from the potent painkiller OxyContin, its maker explored expanding into the attractive market fueled by the drug's popularity, treatment of opioid addiction. This is according to previous secret passages in a court document filed by the state of Massachusetts.
This is worse than...
Which cartel is running this business?
No shit. Pfizer.
Purdue Pharma?
For Purdue Pharma.
No, yeah. There's a family behind it.
No, there was a...
Yeah, just start calling them the...
ProPublica.
Didn't we have a story a couple of weeks ago, or maybe you were just telling us about it a couple of weeks ago, that Philip Morris wants to get into vaping? They're dropping
their... They already
are. They're dropping their cigarette line to get into vaping.
Yeah.
And that's like this. You know, it's like, we've addicted a million people. Here's the thing that helps people quit.
This is Philip Morris.
Yeah.
They make these.
This is the thing that helps people quit. So we're gonna capitalize on that.
Yep.
And the same thing here with opioids. It's like, we're going to now capitalize on the addiction we caused for you. Yeah.
You liberals are always trying to interfere with business. That's what's happening. What's wrong with you people? You hate the free market and freedom.
Yeah, we do. I absolutely fucking hate it.
I'm sorry, the illusion of free markets and freedom.
Down with the capitalist system!
I know nothing. I mean, it is. It's just fucking nuts. And yet, I read that headline, and the reason that I came back and threw it in the show was because I had not one... What's smaller than an ounce? I had not one.
Iota.
Iota.
No surprise at all. I just, as I was skimming through, I just went,
why should it?
Well, yeah.
Yeah,
and
no shit.
Flip, 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 flip. Red flag pops up. Hey, go back. Mm-hmm. Go back. You just flip by something that is fucking egregious, and you were like, I am not surprised.
Well, Forrest got prescribed a lot of these, OxyContin and other opioids, to deal with his pain.
Yep.
And they didn't touch it.
Not nearly
enough. And unless he really super upped his dose. The one thing that always got the pain for him and dealt with the pain was cannabis.
Yep.
And
well, he was doing a lot of the opioids at least a month ago. He was telling me that he was on doses of that stuff that would kill anybody else.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
He'd grown accustomed to them. He'd
gotten to where he could handle
because,
it.
Yeah.
Well, it was the same reason why when the doctor said you need to quit smoking, and he just laughed at him. You know.
That was, I'll give you a surreal conversation. A couple hours before he died, we were out talking with one of the nurses, and she was like, have we done anything about nicotine, like a patch? Because up until, you know, he got those last couple of days, he was smoking a lot. And it was like this round robin of, oh, yeah.
You wonder why he was so grumpy in those last couple hours?
And so they were working on that when he finally passed. Is they were trying to get him a nicotine patch. Oh, I felt bad about that. I'm like, it didn't even fucking cross my mind. And I'm sitting out here 10 feet from the other side of the door, sucking off my goddamn vape stick like some sort of a frat boy douchebag. That was hard. You know how hard it was not to smoke?
You're eating your Hardee's meal while the kids are starving in the cages next to you? That's
yeah,
what's happening?
That's what's happening there, yeah.
Nice.
I want Hardee's so bad right now. Oh, my God.
I don't think they exist anymore.
They do on the East Coast.
They do.
Do they?
Yeah. And they're still better than Carl's Jr.
Yeah.
Even though they're the same.
They're owned by Carl's Jr., but they have their own thing they do.
So, another one, acts of kindness. See how this all ties in?
This yes.
Yeah. A Chicago woman's act of kindness helped homeless people stay warm during last week's dangerous polar vortex. Candace Payne impulsively charged 20 hotel rooms on her credit card before it snowballed into a life-saving effort by a group of strangers. She booked the hotel rooms after realizing how life-threatening the sub-zero temperatures would be for Chicagoans without homes. She posted about it on social media, and soon the donations and offers to bring food came flooding in. 22 below zero. I have been in Chicago in the winter before, and I've been in Minnesota in the winter.
Neither are warm in the winter.
No. The first time was on the border of South Dakota and Minnesota when it was 11.
That's like a scene from Fargo when you're there.
Yeah. And I had left Colorado many hours before. And it was snowing, but it was a Colorado snow. So I was wearing shorts, you know.
As you do in Colorado.
Yeah. As you do in Colorado, yeah.
I had my shorts on and a hoodie, and I was fine all the way into Kansas City. And then I hiked north from there, not knowing how cold it was getting outside, just that I was getting better gas mileage. And when I finally got to wherever it was I was going to spend the night, I had parked facing into the wind. So I opened my door, and it slammed shut. And I was like, oh, well, that's windy. Yeah, I suppose I'll just have to hold that door open. So I pushed the door open, and it was cold. I mean, it cooled the fucking car down to the point where the dog was looking up like, what's going on?
What did you do?
What demon did you invite in here?
Yeah. And so I step out of the car, and as my foot hits the pavement, the wind going underneath the door that was unshielded shin from knee down.
Yep.
Felt like suddenly I had been lit on fire. The fire had been put out and I was in my third degree blisters, which I have had. And so I jump out of the truck.
Necrotic skin blisters. Yeah.
And run into the hotel or the motel.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, holy shit, it's cold out there. Three different people, all wearing giant Air Force parkas, the big furry
yeah. Parka. Yeah.
All of them, and they're wearing their pack boots and their snowmobile outfits and everything. Turn around, and they're like, "Yeah." You know, most of us wear pants around here in the winter. And I'm like, I just came from Colorado, and they're like, "Oh yeah,
okay. It's not cold there."
Yeah, that was fucking
nuts. That makes it sound like Colorado is like California in the winter. No.
It's the California, the Rockies.
Exactly.
It gets in the 20s.
Yeah. Yeah. 20s, but I mean, everybody's
all light, fluffy snow, and it's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, we went to Chicago for the...
That's why I gave you the bottle opener.
National Restaurant Association, the NRA convention, a couple of times in the winter. And, you know, it was that... It's a humid cold, you know?
It's the kind that sinks right into your bones.
Yeah, and so in Minneapolis, it was bad, and it was cold, yeah. You know, and it hurt.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was like, if you get up to Duluth and you're right off the lake, or you're in Chicago and you're right off the lake, you know, every wind gust is 40 degrees cooler than the air, and it's, you're moist.
That, kids, is how air conditioning works.
And and it's so fucking humid, you can break a sweat having a walk in 15 below zero temperatures. It's nuts. And so this lady is fucking awesome. And I am just, whew. So anyway, ultimately she, and
the fact that she just basically just started dumping it on her credit card.
Yeah.
Without even thinking about it.
Nope.
I think a lot of people may need to help her out when that bill comes due.
I think they already have.
Yeah.
Honestly.
But she and other volunteers dug deep into their pockets and picked up the tab for 60 rooms at a hotel in Chicago's South Side.
Honestly, Rahm Emanuel, if you don't fucking pay her credit card bill, you're the biggest son of a bitch in the world, and we already thought you were.
Yeah, he already
is. But see, it's Chicago's South Side, so that's like $10 for a room.
That's true.
Jeez.
They don't have heat. Oh, no, that's the jail in New York.
That's just the jail.
Yeah.
That was the one this morning. If you watch the news reports on that one, you can hear the guys banging tin cups on the bars of their windows all the way out in the street.
Oh, is that the, what do they call them? It's not a jail. They have a specific word for it, but I've heard about these jails.
Yeah.
This jail. It's actually an old, it's been there forever. And they put them in these things, these cells, and they are just completely open to the world, to nature and everything. I'm like, what is that? Like right next door to the Central Park Zoo? Is that the problem?
It's like something out of Game of Thrones.
A little bit.
Versus like a little hole carved in a cliff.
Up there in the Eyrie.
Yeah. It is. It's a fucking dungeon that they throw them in. And these things have been around forever. Yeah.
Colorado Senate has passed a bill to have the state award its presidential electoral votes to the winner of the national popular vote.
National popular vote?
Yeah.
We all get to decide who Colorado senator will be?
No, not the senator. President.
The president. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So okay. They are trying to do away with their participation in the Electoral College. I am delighted, and I think the more
we're no longer appointing an electorate.
No, it's more that...
An electoral judge, whatever they're called.
Yeah. Hillary Clinton won the popular vote, so Colorado's electoral votes go to her.
Yeah.
You know, and it basically sidesteps.
Didn't they go to her anyway? Or did their electoral judge?
Pretty sure they...
I don't think their electoral judge voted for...
Well, no. I mean, that changes it a little bit, because even if Colorado had voted for Trump, mm-hmm. if Hillary had won the popular vote across the country, then Colorado would throw their votes behind her, which is going to piss off people in Colorado that wanted Colorado to vote for their other candidate.
Yeah, that's right? True. That's true. No, because
the presidency is a national contest. So.
Well, anytime you get a populist in, the country is going to vote one way.
Right.
But this was the most divisive. I think one of the more divisive ones we've had in a long time.
Oh, you just wait till next time.
Oh, no shit.
It always screws the Democrat, right? They've never had this happen with a Republican in my memory, where the Republican won the popular vote, but the Democrat won the electoral vote.
There's no such thing as a Republican winning a popular vote.
Exactly.
That's not. And no, W doesn't count because his first election was a sham. When the Supreme Court pulls such a drastic fuckery of the American electorate that they have to, in their decision, write, we're doing this.
Yeah, but
no one else is allowed to ever do it because it is so odious.
He called his popular win for his second term a mandate of the people. His popular percentage was 51%. That's not a mandate of anyone.
Yeah.
That's one guy happened to vote for him instead. That was how it went down.
Yep.
Or one state happened to vote for him instead. Yeah. I mean, that's how it went down. It was ridiculous. that he called it a mandate of the people that he'd be president again. Yeah. Of course, Trump could lose and call it a mandate of the people that he won.
And he will.
Biggest inauguration ever.
Not bad.
Fake news. I should have won. I won. Fake news that I lost.
Women are texting, "I want a baby," to their boyfriends, and the responses are funny as hell. At Kellycopter on Twitter.
That's the end of me being a boyfriend.
She typed, "I want a baby.
His number's no longer in service."
Yep. And then screenshot the things. So one of the first ones was, "I want a baby," to which she was replied by the boyfriend, "We have like $12 combined." Okay, "I want a baby." Mine?
Mine?
Well, yeah, who else's? Aquaman's? "I want a baby." Like, for lunch? "I want a baby. Give me a week. What color?"
Nice.
"I want a baby." "No." "Oh, okay. Wait. But don't ask another guy. I'll do it." "I want a baby. We're lesbians." "I want a baby." "Right now?" "Yes." "I thought you want to lose weight."
brave man there.
And you know what?
Dead man there.
Not dumb. Because he's not going to have a baby.
Yep. He's not having a baby.
"I want a baby." "Matthew has left the chat." Let's go. "I want a baby." "I'm baby." "I want a baby." "You already have the dog." Or this one.
Honestly, I think I said this once.
"I want a baby." "Good for tax returns."
Yeah, I think I've said that once.
"I want a baby." "I'm gay." "You weren't gay last night." "I want a baby." "We have to focus on Game of Thrones." "Seriously, do I sound like I'm kidding?" "I want a baby." "Really?" Happy face, and then laughing. "No, I could barely take care of my crybaby ass self." "I want a baby." "Best answer of all of them? Give me a pizza, and I'll think about it."
Woo!
On to inspiring people. That one has nothing to do with
that. That was funny. Yeah. I like that.
Okay, that was just me saying, you know what? We're going to need a light moment.
Thank you for the light moment.
Thank you for that. We needed that one.
Tiffany did it to me.
Gave you a baby?
No, she did the text thing. This is how I found this article.
Oh, okay.
Ooh,
I want a baby.
And I was like, oh my fucking God. And I spelled it all out.
Yeah. There is no fucking way this is happening.
I'm 46 years old. My kids are almost done.
By hell, you're already a grandfather.
Yeah? I'm not from the Bible. I don't need to have kids well into my hundreds.
I've already done the responsible thing.
You have?
Have you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Years and years ago, after the second.
Was it a secret?
No.
Oh.
I bragged about that shit. That was awesome. For any guy who has not gotten sniffed, go get it right now.
How about, talk me through it.
You show up at the doctor. They ask you if you want to watch. You ask them if they're psychotic. Who the fuck would want to watch that happen? They bring in some other people to watch. They make a little incision. They cut the tube. They cauterize it with like a blowtorch or something. I don't know.
I love they bring other people in to watch.
Yeah. You go home, they
come
tell you...
Come and see the spectacular taint! Look right. At the taintiness of his
Look
taint!
Look at this sack of glory! So...
smooth, like the buttocks of a baby!
Yeah, so they sniff it, they tell you not to move for 3 days.
Okay.
On the second day, I carried a half a basket of laundry.
Yeah.
Just to see. Horrible mistake. But you sit in a chair for 3 days, you play video games and hold the frozen peas... And then you're fine.
Yeah?
That's it.
So I got a question.
Huh?
It's a personal question.
Is it the same?
When you have a date with yourself, does stuff still come out?
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay.
It's a little less sticky at first, and then after like 2 or 3 months, it's normal again. It shoots just as far, Cleans off on the curtains just as nice.
Oh, yeah.
So Wisconsin basketball star has no plans to stop protesting racism during the national anthem.
A small crowd of diehard women's basketball fans gathered in the Xfinity Center on Thursday night.
Well played, madam.
Big Ten conference showdown between the Wisconsin Badgers and hometown Maryland Terrapins.
Can I just say Clarity just became my hero?
Oh, yeah.
Right there.
That was well done.
At the end of warm-ups, the opposing teams gathered briefly by the benches and casually formed in parallel lines on the court as the audience rose to its feet and placed hands on hearts. But one player, Wisconsin senior Marcia Howard, never left the sidelines. She took a seat alone on the Badgers' sideline. She put her elbows on her thighs, bowed her head, and silently said a prayer for the entirety of the national anthem. Her actions were quiet, peaceful, respectful, but make no mistake, this is a protest. I'm using my platform to raise awareness of injustice, inequality, and the blind spot of racism that still exists in today's society, she said. She's a 6-foot-tall forward who leads her team in scoring. 2.5 years ago, Colin Kaepernick started doing much the same thing. And you've seen how that's just fucked with him.
Yeah.
I have to hope.
Destroyed his career to do that.
Yeah, that the WNBA, you know, is better behaved when she finishes school and is looking for a career afterwards.
The stories are still happening. That's the problem. This shit still is going on. And
well, and I think everybody needs to participate. We all are in situations where the national anthem is happening, and we all need to do the same in support.
Okay. I have to continue to sit during the national anthem?
I could get a little sticky, but I could maybe make it happen. Yeah.
Like not as sticky at the beginning, and then after a couple months, it gets more sticky.
I thought we just got past the sticky.
Then it washes off the curtains just fine. No,
you wash off on the curtains.
They do the pledge at our Democratic meetings here. I just sit, but I've always done that. I was raised Quaker, so
it's why hotel curtains are made of such sturdy material.
Seriously. Clarity, I'm with you now.
I tried, guys. I really did.
So you're a Quaker.
I was raised Quaker. I'm not necessarily a Quaker
did
now.
Did you vote for Nixon?
I didn't.
Oh, okay. So
did you eat a lot of oats growing up?
So that's the thing with the Quakers, not to stand for
like
the anthem.
A hero is what I really want to know. If like Quaker oats was like a thing that Quakers did because it was funny, or like blasphemous?
I happen to just really like oatmeal. It wasn't a Quaker thing.
All right.
No, you don't pledge allegiance to a country that could, in fact, go to war, being a pacifist. At least that was my understanding.
I don't think Richard Nixon was a very good Quaker.
He was a terrible Quaker.
He was a shit Quaker. Oh, yeah. Quaker? No.
Yeah, he was.
Fuck that guy.
He was well known for being a Quaker, and he was the one who said, I have a way to end the Vietnam War. Re-elect me. Okay, we're going to Cambodia now.
And Laos.
And it made it like 10 times. He made the war 10 times worse. This is a pacifist religion. And he made it 10 times worse.
Terrible Quaker.
Bad Quaker. Bad Quaker.
Bad,
no biscuit.
Bad.
No biscuit for you.
Do they eat biscuits? No, I'm thinking of Seventh-day Adventists.
Yeah, no, they eat plenty of biscuits. They're made of oatmeal.
They dance too.
Oh, Seventh-day Adventists. Always funny. You dated one of those.
I did.
She was a psycho. Ah! I don't think she listens.
I hope not.
I was just going to say.
I'll say it. She was a fucking nut job. And she was mean to my friend. That's not cool. She was. She wasn't very nice to you.
She was not very nice to
me. No.
No. But that's why we broke up. And yeah. We've since become Facebook friends. And there was a weird little thing she had where I was supposed to be her fellow bitchy friend. And I was like, well, I am bitchy.
That's true.
I guess if I'm going to have a bitchy friend, you can be my bitchy friend. I prefer my friend Dallin, who's gay, or
I'm in third place. We do a show where all we do is complain. We do two shows where all we do is complain, and I'm in third place.
You're in third place.
I'm drinking more of your whiskey.
Good luck with that. We all paused to see how that goes.
Yeah, we're watching the facial expressions. The upper lip goes up. Oh, the grin, the grimace of fun.
No, I'm mad now. I've had my feelings hurt. Oh, God, that's hot. It's got such a pepper to it.
It does.
I like it.
Did you get it in your cheeks? That's my favorite part.
I did, but I bit my cheek here, so it hurts.
Oh, I hate that.
What?
Can I tell you? What is it about that? It's like you'll bite the inside of your lip, and all of a sudden, the next thing you know, you're always biting the inside of your lip for like
The scar.
The scar. It swells up, and then just makes you more likely to get bit again.
I think it's because your teeth are moving, because that's what teeth do. They're like the tectonic plates.
Yeah.
And that first one is just a precursor. That
I
fucking
love
tooth
this
is,
analogy.
That tooth
teeth
shifted.
Are like tectonic plates.
They keep on moving.
Science.
And without liquid to kind of keep them happy, they're gonna crash.
That's right. You get a couple of volcanoes there in the inside of your cheek.
Abscess teeth.
Right? Oh, man.
Cankers.
Hot spots like Hawaii.
I knew a woman who...
from Nantucket?
Ground her teeth so much that they were... The back molars just cracked, and she had to have them all repaired and capped. And it was like...
So those sleeping mouth guards.
I'm like,
for.
You need a mouth guard. I'm like, if you're grinding your teeth that bad. And she went to a therapist and found out that when she was abused as a child, one of the abuses they used was they would electrocute her.
What?
And they're like, so what happens when you're electrocuted? And I'm like, yeah, your teeth clench. And I was like, yeah. So in her
somebody
in her,
used to electrocute their kid?
This was she was badly abused. This
I don't
was
have a second happy story. We have to go back and read
this. It was bad news. This whole thing was bad news to hear her stories, and I was like, "Oh my God, I'm sorry that it happened to you, and I'm extra sorry I asked about what happened to you." Because it was bad. It was bad. And but yeah, that was the teeth just breaking apart because she would grind her teeth so hard.
All right, we're gonna burn through some news here. We're gonna run long. And Jason has I think it's part five of his Let's Beat Donnie sidetrack coming up too. So
unless he has something to say about Forrest. So.
No, I read his thing already. The Mucinex booger said that God wanted Donald Trump to become president. Sorry, Sarah Sanders said that God wanted Donald Trump to be president.
I was going to say, the Mucinex booger isn't really that mean.
No, he's pretty cool.
Seems like a decent enough booger.
Somebody found a screenshot of the Mucinex mucus monster and just happened to stick it next to her face and it was... It was just uncanny.
The queen of the smoky eye psychos. Yeah.
Judge has warned that the Roger Stone and anybody involved in that is probably going to be hit with a gag order. She told Stone that she doesn't want him treating the case like a book tour. Ocasio-Cortez.
Speaking of psycho.
Yeah, no shit. is inspiring the Democratic presidential hopefuls to come out swinging on climate change.
If there's anything that Ocasio-Cortez has done is it's woken up the fucking party and said you need to stand strong on our things, on our platform.
She's fabulous.
If you don't do this, we're going to fail. And
mark
she's
my word,
right.
She will be president someday.
Yeah, but we got to wait 5 years before she's even old enough to be president.
I know.
She's getting her practice in.
I know she's getting a lot of practice in. She's doing really well. She's sitting on these committees and then turning around and reporting.
The thing that I
like
about her is that she's actually doing her job, and then she's calling out other people for not doing theirs.
Yep,
I love
right?
that.
Yes.
Politics aside, everything she's done is like full on, well within the realm of what she's supposed
amazing.
To be doing. A job. That's her job.
They recently had a hearing on
she's fucking killing it
on public money that goes to. Drug research.
Right, yeah.
That they actually push out to the drug companies, this public money, and she's like, and yet you're overcharging for insulin.
Yeah, that was a good
hearing.
And
she doesn't just say it in a hearing. She fucking tweets it out. She gets it out all over social media. That's amazing to me.
I sent her $27 recently.
Aw.
I have the Hatch Act. I'm not allowed to send her any money, but I think she's, I will support her vocally and publicly forever.
I am a victim of Hatch's actions and don't have any money to send. Boom! Orrin Hatch slam.
I think my Hatch Act came from his the guy who was Hatch before him, and I think it was his dad or his grandpa or something.
I don't know. Could have been his twin. Look, we're done with this show. We're going to go over to Patreon right now. We're going to talk some more about Forrest, and we are going to talk about the current field of 2020 Democrats saying that they're running for office. Aside from that, please do me the favor, and instead of inserting a Patreon pitch, though, if you want to join Patreon, you by all means go over to the Patreon/DFenMedia. But visit us over at Podcast Phil, P-H-I-L. Jesus Christ.
Wow, it's a good whiskey.
It's short for philanthropy.
It's P-H like W-H in whiskey.
Different spellings.
Podcast Pahil.
Pahil.
Pahil. Help us send our buddy to Valhalla with a raucous, and much-deserved loud-ass party.
Please.
All right.
Fuck that guy!
When you find reality is yanked violently from straight ahead to the hard insane right, you know you're off the beaten path. Defenestrate Media and The Left Show present The Sidetrack with Jason Williams.
Welcome to The Sidetrack. I'm Jason Williams. Last week on the Beat Trump series here, I argued that Democrats, in order to win in 2020, and more broadly, to reset the conversation and definition of this country, who we're going to be, Democrats need to embrace identity politics. It's one of those rarest of political moments when a grander, more noble goal also happens to be what will help you win the election. We'll get back to that theme throughout the rest of this year, starting next week. This week, I want to take a step aside a bit and talk about what happens when Democrats do embrace identity politics, because this will be part of what needs to be handled, for lack of a better phrase, in 2020 and ongoing. Democrats have in the past dabbled with identity politics, but the overall approach of the Democratic Party for decades has largely been see no racism, say no racism. Great that there's no say no racism, right? But see no racism, that hasn't worked out so well. And it's left Democrats in a position where it took far longer than it should have to see elected Democrats coming forward and actually calling the words out of the president's mouth, the words and actions of Steve King, and the hundreds of other examples we can find out. Too much silence when these types of things happen. Why are we just now seeing a really concentrated effort that includes Democratic Party officials and elected Democrats at the highest levels of government willing to jump on board with the idea of, at very least, censure for Representative Steve King, and some going so far as to call for his resignation? Why haven't we seen this? What he's done this year is not that different than what he did last year, the year before that. Why now? Well, part of it has been the internal pressure from the base of the Democratic Party to call these things out. And that pressure is an embrace of identity politics to some extent. It is an embrace of saying, look, race is an issue here still, and we need to be doing something about that to challenge some of these worst actors who have gotten away with it because they're not brazenly burning crosses and lynching black men from trees like they were at a time in history. Now, it's far more subtle, easier to ignore, but not for the Democratic Party. And this is something that has held the Democratic Party back. It's held them back for decades. Although it's not been as obvious, it's been an issue for a really long time. So, Democrats need to embrace identity politics. They need to embrace race as an issue, as a discussion, as a conversation. There is no way to address what a Bernie Sanders or an Elizabeth Warren will be talking about without addressing race. Just as there is no way to talk about what maybe Senator Cory Booker or Kamala Harris will be talking about as a presidential candidate without addressing the class system itself. They are inseparable. The inequality in our country and racism are the same thing. Flaws and horrible tragedies of the justice system and our prison obsession are inseparable when it comes to race and inequality. And it just keeps building layer by layer by layer until, yes, it can get so confusing in the public policy realm that when you're addressing a specific issue, which is what we'll always have to be doing when it comes to public policy, for the most part, you're needling away at it. That's the nature of public policy and bureaucracy. But what gets lost in all of this is what it's really all about. How we got to a system that is imprisoning black men and women at a rate imaginably higher than others, other races. How we got to a system where we still had states in the United States that did not require a unanimous decision from a jury, a holdover from the Jim Crow days of the South. That's 2018. And we've pretended for too long that these issues are done. Obama himself, I think, contributed a lot to kicking this can down the road with his pretense of post-partisanship. It doesn't help. We need to tackle some of these issues head on. And the timing for the Democratic Party to do so couldn't be more perfect. One of the ways to understand this is to understand the reaction to it and the fever pitch that some of this has reached as Democrats have shown an increasing willingness to embrace identity politics. Everyone from Bret Stephens, The New York Times, Glenn Greenwald at The Intercept, Raina Foorhaar, a global business magazine columnist and associate editor of the Financial Times at the Aspen Institute last summer, all of them kind of saying the same thing. Democrats need to embrace a solid economic populism message because that's how Trump won. And it's the same argument again and again and again. Democrats need to talk about inequality separate from race. They need to talk about wages separate from race. They need to talk about swaths of society that have been overlooked without actually talking about race. They need to talk about the economic populism that propelled Trump to the White House, they say, without talking about black men and women, Latinos. And you'll notice that at the core of this argument, each and every time you hear it or read it or see it on your TV, someone arguing the Democrats need to steer clear of identity politics in order to win in 2020, every single damn time, you'll see that their argument rests on one gigantic lie. And that is that Trump won because he ran on economic populism. Trump won because he embraced identity politics in the opposite way that I'm suggesting Democrats do. Trump won because he stirred up the latent subtle and sometimes not so subtle racism that rests inside every white American voter, whether they like to admit it or not. And enough of them responded in enough key counties and states that the Electoral College handed him a victory. That is how Trump won. And you will never see that spelled out in any argument that Democrats should avoid identity politics in exchange for an economic populist message. Every single time, they'll try to gloss over what Trump triggered that handed him the win. Democrats need to respond to this in kind, strategically, and with the opposite message overall. Democrats need to embrace the ties between race, criminal justice reforms, wages and inequality, our economy at large, our spending at large, our public policy when it comes to the environment. Every single one of these can and should be tied back to race, a person's identity, which, as I argued last week, is inseparable from a person's political identity. And a final example of how silly these arguments against Democrats running this way in 2020 being a successful strategy and overall the best thing we could do for our country right now. One final example for you this week. Unfortunately, one of my favorites used it. Senator Sherrod Brown himself, just last week, talking about a potential, maybe, who knows, presidential run, used the phrase white working class voters. Democrats haven't done a good enough job, he said, talking to white working class voters. What that actually means is white people. Democrats haven't done a good enough job, they're arguing, of talking to white people. Bullshit. Democrats need to embrace identity politics as a means to beginning a conversation about solving some very real problems in this country that will never be solved unless we can at least admit that identity politics of the white folks have always been okay and have always been driving the car. I'm Jason Williams, and I'll see you next week.